How you gonna know what to do if you don't know what time it is? What time it is? What time it is?
Listen up. Listen up. Listen up.
How you gonna know what to do if you don't know what time it is?
Listen up. Listen up. Listen up.
Knowledge is your birthright. Every human being should be gifted with the right to know self and the environment and the universe into which God gave us birth and life. For us to come out of our mother's wombs and be 20 years old, 30 years old, not able to read, victims now of where we place our ears. Who do you listen to?
Listen up. Listen up.
How you gonna know what to do if you don't know what time it is?
Listen up. Listen up. Listen up.
Welcome to Listen Up here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community and, of course, the next generation. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Tonight, it may be thundering and lightning and all of those great things happening outside, but tonight we're going to definitely bring that heat. We're going to first kick off the conversation talking to our brother Dietrich Muhammad of the Racial Wealth Divide, to talk about all of the happenings of the NAACP National Convention. And what does it mean? What type of impact will it have on the larger agenda facing Black America? And then later, we'll be checking in with LaRon Finney and John Muga. These are the guys that are putting together the basketball tournament. That's right, TBT is coming to town. And guess who's going to be hosting it? Our Baltimore's very own Carmelo Anthony. We'll have that conversation. And I got something very special for you for the official What's Good in the Hood Street Report. Everybody's talking about establishing peace in Baltimore. This weekend, next weekend, we want to make sure that your face is in the streets. Not indoors, in the streets, as we're talking about spreading peace all to our city. So make sure you stick around a whole lot on tonight's edition of Listen Up here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community, the next generation. Man, just get out the rain, man, and listen to us. We'll be right back.
career while I sat in law school. I was 24 hours from death, and at that point, when the Lord spared my life, I knew that I had purpose and I was committed to that purpose. I moved on, and when I ran for state attorney, I did not run on my desire not to seek death penalty. I'd been a prosecutor, I'd been a public defender, a professor of law at FAMU's law school. I had seen a lot, and that wasn't what I stood on. What I stood on was data. What I stood on was research. What I stood on was evidence-based policies upon which we can win reform. When it comes to criminal justice reform, the truth is the only thing that matters. We're inundated with people feeling that they're afraid of it, feeling that this isn't the way to go, feeling that I feel this way, this is how it's always been. But the truth is, it's not working. More people die in prison before they're executed, and we have funded them living in prison until the day that they die. More people are killed, and we're not reducing it. The states that have death penalty actually have higher homicide rates than those that don't. So when I made the decision, I violated no laws. Let that not be mistaken. I understood the statute. I moved forward, and I used my prosecutorial discretion to say that I would not proceed with death penalty.
That was Aramis Ayala at the NAACP National Convention from 4 days ago, why she won't do death penalties. One of the many conversations that happened at the National Convention that of the NAACP, the nation's oldest civil rights organization. Joining us on the line is our brother who joins us every last Friday of the month. He talks about the disparities of racial wealth in a lot of areas, economics, housing, and whatnot. But he was also one of the members, I guess, and one of the officers for the NAACP, to give us an insight as to what he saw happening at this year's convention and the potential impact it will have on the larger issues facing Black America. I'm always happy to have my brother joining us, Brother Dietrich Muhammad. Peace and blessings, Brother Dietrich. How are you, sir?
Salam. Very good. Glad to be on with you today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know that you are a man of many passport stamps. But I know that you are out and about taking care of the business. But I wanted to thank you first and foremost for being on the show again with us tonight, because, you know, we definitely wanted to get your take on what's been happening here in Baltimore over the past week with the National Convention of the NAACP. First and foremost, did you feel like it was a successful gathering, a great convention?
Well, I think it was a successful gathering, but I think it's successful. We have to look at the context of where the NAACP right now. The NAACP is in a space of a lot of transition right now. They have a new board chair, and like we don't know, but board chair is one of the most powerful positions in the NAACP, with the former chair, Rosalind Brock, having stepped down about a year ago, and they just appointed an interim president this past Saturday as Cornell William Brooks' contract, former president, this contract wasn't renewed, and so now they have an interim president, and they're hoping to get a more full-time president coming in by 2018. So, you know, definitely wasn't at all the biggest convention with the most press flash. I think it was kind of quiet in terms of national media, but I think it showed, you know, even in the midst of all this transition, the NAACP can still pull together these gatherings that brings in thousands of people, thousands of activists from across the country, as well as bringing different types of celebrities, activists, politicians, to discuss the important issues we're facing today.
And you know what, Brother Dietrich, I was listening to some folks, some folks that were on my the News One panel this morning, and some of the sisters on there were talking about, you know, how this year's convention, in terms of the numbers, really outdid last year's convention. The spirit was different. So they sounded more optimistic, more hopeful about what they saw. But, you know, there's the flip side of that. Those who are still outside of the membership, and I'm a member of the NAACP and whatnot, but there's still those who say, hey, look, okay, we've done another convention. And we got another gathering. A lot of folks are talking about doing A, B, and C, but the NAACP is still struggling and still challenged with being quote-unquote relevant. I heard that the new chairman or the new interim president, Brother Derek Johnson, talking about, you know, that this is a transitionary, this is a transitory place for the NAACP. A lot of restructuring is currently happening. But he feels hopeful because there are a lot of things that the NAACP on the that's doing on the ground in terms of policy and whatnot that they just don't publicize as much. So what do you take from that? I mean, this challenge, the relevancy, but yet the NAACP is saying, hey, look, we are more relevant now than we have been before. It's just that we're not publicizing our work. What's your take?
Well, I mean, I think there's a mixture. I mean, I think the idea of this idea of the NAACP not being relevant, I mean, this is a critique of the NAACP since probably at least 1960, right? Like, I mean, there's always been this critique about, you know, is the NAACP relevant? And we're talking about in the 60s, at the height of the civil rights movement, there were questions about whether the NAACP was relevant because, look, we have these organizations like SCLC, Dr. King's organization. We had the Nation of Islam with Malcolm X, Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We had the Black Panther Party. You had SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. You had CORE. You had all these groups. And people were saying, is the NAACP, you know, really relevant? You know, they, you know, they say the 70s, they say the 80s, 90s, and they say it today. So I think, you know, but throughout all of those decades, there were always people coming through the NAACP. Because I think you have to understand what the NAACP is. And mm-hmm. it's not so much a movement. It's an institution. And it's an institution that consistently is producing people that go on to become leaders in other movements and other organizations, who's doing oftentimes work, you know, oftentimes some work that is quiet, but that is important, you know. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, the thing I find amazing about NAACP members is how committed they are.
Yeah.
And like how, and how if you meet a local NAACP leader, they're not just the NAACP leader, they're also a leader of some youth group. They're also, you know, a leader of the local PTA, but they're very involved in the community doing many different important pieces. So I think to dismiss the NAACP is a mistake. And one thing that I, you know, I think one of the things that points to the seriousness and necessity of having groups like the NAACP is looking at this last election. Like, I think there was an absence of NAACP action in the 2016 election. Mm. Previous to that, there had been a big movement in the NAACP to get a new computerized voter registration system to get people out to vote. We were seeing record levels of black turnouts and votes. We saw in some key small districts blacks coming out and making a important vote to help turn the tide of some really important legislation, local legislation like $15 minimum wage. It has now become a national issue. Local NAACPs were really instrumental in advancing that. And I really think in the last election that a strong NAACP, you know, would have been critical and might have been a power that could have stopped actually the Trump election.
Mm.
But there was not a strong NAACP pulling people out to vote using their VAN system, which is a voter registration system. And, you know, again, you know, just a you know, few thousand votes in some key districts help turn the election the way it was. You know, I'm not saying definitively a strong NAACP would have changed the outcome of the election, but it sure could have. And it's sometimes hard to recognize the effects of something that's missing because there's no evidence of it. You just don't see it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think again, it's why it's so important that we have a stronger NAACP. And I'm hoping, you know, I think Derek Johnson, he's the state conference president out of Mississippi. He's been involved with the NAACP for at least 10 years. He's only maybe in his mid-40s. I think he's a great interim president. He knows the grassroots. He knows national. And hopefully, you know, they will get a strong president. And I don't know if the current chair of the board will stay on, Leon Russell. But hopefully they can have a strong president and chair of the board that will work together and do some important and help lead the country and all the work that we need to do across this country during this time of Trump and during this ongoing time of racial inequality and racial economic inequality.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in to Listen Up tonight here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, I'm talking to my big brother, Brother Dietrich Muhammad. As we talk, continue the conversation about all of the, you know, the footnotes from the NAACP National Convention, you know, his impressions as he has worked within the ranks of the NAACP. But looking forward, in terms of what impact will this particular convention and what impact will their agenda have on the issues affecting Black America. Now, Brother Dietrich, I know that the NAACP is going to embark upon a national listening tour. And way that the president, chairman, Brother Derek Johnson explained it on News One is that he said that this tour is an opportunity for the NAACP to learn and hear directly from its members as to, you know, make sure that they are stay on a certain course, that they're on track with their agenda items dealing with police brutality, voter registration fraud, and voter registration issues, dealing with some of the economic issues. But there are some who saying, hey, look, listening tour, Black folks are suffering. That's all you need to know. When are we going to get to work? How important is something like a listening tour in light of where we currently are, especially for an organization this large, an institution this that is potentially this impactful?
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard Derek Johnson's explanation of why he wants a listening tour, because honestly, I think because, you know, again, people will critique the NAACP all day, but it's still, to my knowledge, the largest African-American civil rights organization and arguably African-American political organization in the country.
Yeah.
With hundreds of thousands of members with, you know, chapters all throughout the country. And again, I think it's very connected to, you know, it's not connected to like 20-year-old necessarily grassroots activists, though, of course, they have one of the probably the largest college civil rights organizations in the country. With networks, you know, through different colleges. But, you know, I think they can get a lot of understanding of what's happening in local communities just through, you know, their own membership and their own infrastructure. I do think the NAACP, particularly over the last 3 or 4 years, has had a big problem in communicating what it does and letting those outside of the NAACP bubble know how the NAACP is engaged. And I do think that is going, you know, that's an important thing, because it's one thing to do good work, but it's another thing to make sure people know you're doing good work and know that you're a resource to help them. And I think there needs to be a lot more work done in that area. You know, it could be they're doing this listening tour to help inform the type of person and the type of vision they want to go forward to for the next president. And I guess in that sense, it could make sense.
Well, the tour will be kicking off in Detroit on August 24th, and then it will be followed up with stops in San Antonio, Texas, in September. According to the NAACP, the tour should, quote, expand our reach, touch our people, engage more diverse audiences, and reinforce our focus on civil rights in this age of great political and social uncertainty. These were the words from from Brother Derek Johnson. The interim
president. Do you know how long the tour is supposed to go on for?
You know what, Brother Dietrich? I don't.
Yeah.
You know what? And it sounds like, honestly, it sounded like when Derek was talking that it was going to take it was going to be a few months. It wasn't going to be like, you know, 10, 12 cities in a 30-day time period. You know what I mean? It wasn't it was going to be a tour and, you know, a couple of cities per every, you know, couple of months. But I think they're touching on some of the major cities and maybe a couple of the minor, the smaller cities. You know, Baltimore probably will be on the list as well.
And it could be that, you know, Derek Johnson as the interim president, again, I understand they're aiming to get someone, a regular president, in by early 2018. So it could be that, you know, if you're only going to be in office for 6 months or something like that, that he sees as interim president, this is something he can lead and do, kind of help keep the NAACP involved, connected to different communities across the country, and gather information and ideas to help support the new president. So it could be a very intelligent way to use your brief time in office as interim president. So I think we'll have to see and watch how they use that. But also, I think it's important to recognize that just because the interim president or some national staff is doing a national tour, it doesn't take away from the work that local chapters, state conferences are doing. So it doesn't mean there's a stop on the work that's being done at the NAACP, because most people don't understand that the NAACP overwhelmingly is a volunteer organization with local volunteers, activists doing good work in their communities. There's only a very small amount of people, probably no more than 100 people, that are actually paid staff members of the national NAACP.
You know what? And that's interesting, because one of the things that I had, is looking at, you know, when Derek Johnson made that point, that saying over 90% of those who are helping with the in making the NAACP what it is, it's all volunteer based. And, you know, and you're right. You mentioned that, you know, you got the highest number of volunteers, or those who stay the longest with any institution, are members of the NAACP. And I think that that speaks volumes. But one of the things that, of course, that they're certainly challenged with is, we had a gentleman by the name of, we had one of the representatives from the Youth Committee for the National Youth and College Division on the show, because that issue still comes up where you have that generation gap. And, you know, Derek Johnson mentioned to me when I was talking to him about it, is that, you know, yes, the Youth and College Division is going to do its part in supporting young activists on the ground, and making sure that the generation gap between, I would say not even generation gap, but the work gap between those young people that are part of the NAACP and those activists that we see on the ground is bridged. And then the generation gap between young people and the older members are bridged. This is a big to-do list for an organization that's, you know, that's trying to, you know, do some different things here. And part of me is like, you know, I'm hopeful. My hope and prayer is that they are able to do it, because at the end of the day, it's actually for the benefit of Black people.
And you know, and to be honest, I mean, the NAACP has never been, at least not to my knowledge, has never been the leader of 20-something-year-old activists, right?
No.
It has NAACP youth chapters, which is a great place for people in high school who want to get it connected into civil rights work to, you know, do that while they're in school, usually because their parents are connected to the NAACP. They also have that great program and competition around music and theater. AXO.
The AXO program, yeah.
And that's a great African-American network that many African-American celebrities have gone through, and so that's a great way for youth to connect. And then they have youth and college chapters, but they oftentimes then have kind of a void, let's say from like 22, 25, till about 45, where, you know, people of that age group aren't as involved, because that's just not just the NAACP thing. Most organizations that are run with volunteers have that void, because people in their 20s and early 30s are so hard on the grind trying to make a profession for themselves, and maybe have young kids, that they don't do much volunteering. People do more volunteering in their late 40s, 50s, 60s. And so this is something that's true with the NAACP. People can see it as a weakness, but I think it's, you know, what the NAACP has been, and it still can make important contributions from that, you know. And so I don't think we should expect that the NAACP, and it shouldn't, you know, there's no organization that should be the end-all, be-all of all activists, right? You know, and we need institutions like the NAACP, but we also need movement, right?
That
are more radical, more agile, what have you. And so we need all of those things together. Again, in the 60s, there were like, you know, 7, 8, you know, or actually probably even a dozen strong Black activist organizations going on all across the country, sometimes fighting each other, sometimes working hand in hand. That's what we need today to really deal with all the issues we have.
You know what, Brother Dietrich? Final minutes of this conversation, I'm very clear that we need some folks. You know, and I'm hearing there's this culture on activism, especially here in the city of Baltimore. Folks act like if you ain't in the streets with everybody all day, every day, you ain't serious about changing the quality of life for Black people in the city. And I just want to debunk that myth, like, totally, and say, get out of here with that. Like, you do not always need to be in the streets. You can be in the courthouse. You can be in the boardroom and make just as much of an impact as those who are on the streets, quote unquote. And I think that there has to be, you got soldiers on the ground, but then you also got the soldiers that are in these settings that are making sure that policy and legislation and other opportunities are happening.
And at the height of the NAACP was looked at for actually making legislation and changing the law.
Right.
Which then grassroots groups, like at the time, Dr. King's SCLP and SNCC,
right,
would then do local protests to make sure the law was being enforced.
Necessary.
You have to have people in different spaces. And what you want, though, is you want people in the streets connected to people in the suites or in the, you know, courtroom or what have you. And so, again, like, we have to understand that, like you're saying, everybody can't be the quarterback. You have to have people in different positions, and we need to support, you know, people in all those positions. Because right now, honestly, you know, we're not super strong in any position.
No.
So every aspect of the Black activist movement needs to step up. So instead of pointing to the largest and longest running one and saying how weak that is, you know, might want to look at whichever one you're of, or if you're not part of any, that's part of the problem, and say, well, what can I do better?
And you know what? And I think that's the big thing, because I know you and I, we always have this conversation in terms of the roles and the lanes that folks need to play based upon the strengths. And at the end of the day, I mean, like in a city like Baltimore, where we're already at 200-something murders, everybody is talking about, well, what you need to do is what you need. No, what you need, like there's obviously no silver bullet to address these issues that we're facing. So how about let's just be supportive of one another and then just try to work it from different angles and see if we can make a greater impact instead of everybody coming under one monolithic person or an idea and thinking that's the only way to do it. Because you know, the issue of our people is so multifaceted.
Absolutely. I've worked for the NAACP. I worked for Reverend Sharpton's National Action Network. I've always been a member of the Nation of Islam, regardless of who I was working for.
Right.
Now I work for Prosperity Now, focused on race and economic development. And I still want Sharpton and his National Action Network to be better, and I still support them. Still supporting the NAACP. I'm still supporting the Nation of Islam and supporting groups that I'm not even that well connected to, just because, again, like no one has the, like you said, silver bullet. So we need help in all areas. And I just want to keep encouraging people to make the best difference they can in the space they fit in.
That's what I'm talking about. Dietrich Muhammad, thank you so much for checking in with us as always, brother. How can folks learn more about the work that you're doing and, of course, talking about the racial wealth divide?
Sure. They can check us out on the Facebook page, Bridging the Racial Wealth Divide. We have a race and wealth podcast. You can go to SoundCloud and find us there. And I used to, the organization I was part of used to be called CFED, but now it's called Prosperity Now. So you can go to prosperitynow.org. And learn about all the work that we do at Prosperity Now around wealth and asset development.
That's what I'm talking about. Dietrich Muhammad, Prosperity Now, Racial Wealth Divide. Brother Dietrich, we look forward to talking to you again next month, dear brother.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Up next, we talk to LaRon Finney and John Mueker about TBT, the basketball tournament, and how it's making its impact here in Baltimore. Stay tuned for that conversation, all coming up on the second half of Listen Up here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community and, of course, the next generation. We'll be right back.
It's gonna be a beautiful day of basketball here today, folks. We're not talking about just regular basketball. Nah, we're talking about street ball.
Street
ball will be played today at
up and down the court.
Come on.
I keep it so fresh on the microphone. I like no interruption when the game is on.
On.
I like slam dunk to take me to the hoop.
Yeah.
My favorite play is the alley-oop. I like the pick and roll.
Go.
I like the give and go. And it's basketball.
Bow wow.
Let's go. Let's go.
Peace and welcome back to Listen Up here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community and, of course, the next generation. I'm your host, Brother Faraji Muhammad. And, of course, we are now joined by our wonderful sports contributor, Mikel Ramos from Rolling with Ramos. Mikel, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I was just about to say, I noticed you're showing everything, but everything sports has my name on it. And shout out to Daddy for my last name.
Rolling with Ramos, Mikel Ramos. We are going to be chatting a little bit with some of the guys behind TBT, the basketball tournament. That's right. Now, if you've been living under a rock, you probably say, well, what is TBT? TBT has been pumping their message out all across the city, got a lot of people buzzing, and we're so happy to have them here on Listen Up on WEAA. We have some of the key coordinators, LaRon Finney, and we have Brother Derek Chase from Stand Up Baltimore, and of course, we have the CEO of TBT, Mr. John Muger, on the line joining us. John, thank you so much for being with us this evening. John? We got John on the line?
I'm here.
All right. Thank you so much, John. We appreciate that.
All right.
Good, good. All right, LaRon, Derek, thank you so much, brothers. Let's start with you. And first, I'm going to start with John and kind of give people an overview of what TBT is. And, Mikel, we could certainly talk about this because I know you are a basketball fan for real, for real. John, to break it out for us, TBT, the basketball tournament, what is this all about?
It is simply a single elimination tournament we held every summer, where anyone in the world can enter a team, and the winning team takes home $2 million. And it's a winner-take-all event, so the second-place team gets nothing. And we have 64 teams that play each year, and we have hundreds that apply all across the country. Mm. And so we are fortunate to be bringing the semifinal and the $2 million winner-take-all game to Coppin next week, and those will all be on ESPN Live.
Now, you said the second place gets nothing, but the first place gets $2 million.
In the words of the great Nelly, two is not a winner and three nobody remembers. So you better get number one because you ain't getting squat.
Love it, love it, love it.
Interesting thing about this whole thing, $500,000 when you guys all started in 2014 and now it's all the way to $2 million. Like, that's a lot of money. Mr. John, may I call you Mr. John? My first question to you, you said the original premise was to completely open up the professional tournament where it basically brings back the structure of team aspect more so than idolizing this whole one-person theme. You know, we just had a whole finals where, you know, you forgot that the Warriors and the Cavaliers was playing because the backdrop was LeBron's legacy and Kevin Durant better not go to Golden State and not win a chip. And you kind of forgot about the teams. Why is that so important as far as constructing a league as such? Especially when it's not on a professional level.
Yeah, I mean, we really wanted to democratize professional sports in a lot of ways, and we really want to put forward a platform where we're all about the underdog, and we're all about the people and the player who is overlooked and who feels they deserve to be playing at the highest level in the world, but they just haven't gotten a shot. And so in TBT, what we have is these very, very high-level professionals who are worthy of being in the NBA. Whatever reason, they're not there. Mm. And for the first time in their life, these players have the ability to choose who they want to play with and choose who they want to go to battle with. And so a lot of these teams are just formed because of out of love for one another and out of camaraderie. And these are guys that they've grown up together in a lot of cases, and they want to get back together and enjoy the run.
That takes free agency, and I want to play with my friend to a whole new level. Mm-hmm. E.I. Mello and everybody else.
Right.
Anywho's,
right.
2018 is around the corner, something I found very interesting. You know, way back when, you know, Dirk Nowitzki and guys like that, and you talk about Manu Ginobili, internationally, as far as international play in the NBA, they've opened up a lot of doors. And, you know, you guys partnered with Yao Ming a couple years back, and the premise it was to bring it to an international platform. 2018 is around the corner. These years go by quickly. I don't know what they do, but how is that still looking, specifically in China? What are we looking forward to as far as that's concerned?
We absolutely want to put on a regional event somewhere else in the world. I can't say whether it's going to be in China or Australia, which is another place that's shown interest in doing it, but that's definitely a goal for 2018, going to another country.
And, you know, John, you know, one of the things about this tournament is, and as I bring LaRon and Derek Chasen into this conversation, is that it's not just a basketball tournament.
That's right.
Brother LaRon, Brother Derek, you know, there is an element where it includes what you call a day of giving. So, Brother LaRon, talk to us a little bit about this.
So it was instrumental when we met with John and his team and Jen Todd and those folks, and they decided to come to Baltimore and to come to Coppin. It was important that it not only be about basketball, but really be about a movement, because what John and his team has established is really the underdog, and Baltimore is the underdog city when you think about all the opportunities that fly over to go to D.C., to go to New York, to go to Philly.
Right.
For them to come to Baltimore, we had to have some substance. So we began building relationships with the anchor institutions, Kaiser, Johns Hopkins, people of that nature, and said, look, let's go into those areas that were impacted 2 years ago by the uprising, and let's see how we can make an impact from health and wellness to job creation to doing cleanup and refurbishing where we can get incentives and opportunities for small business within those communities. So Chase and I came up with the Day of Giving, and it has blown to extreme proportions with over 40 vendors at Mondawmin for the health and wellness, 60 vendors at Coppin State University where Ray Lewis and his Global 1000 Baltimore will source about 300 jobs. And then we have 12 activations between Upton Penn North, Cherry Hill, and North Engay where we're going to go into those communities and make an impact. Mm. So the TBT is really the underdog. It's really about highlighting those folks who really want to work hard, and we've transitioned that not only on the basketball court but into the community.
Derek, how does that you know fit in the larger scheme of where the city currently is? I mean, we are already at 200 murders, and I know that you know for a long time, brother, you have. I mean, your heart is in the streets for our people here. But when we look at how basketball is playing out, how this Day of Giving playing out, do you believe that it's going to really make an impact, the type of impact that we're going to at least start seeing some of the declines in the death?
I think this every step that we make forward is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
What I like to count Faraji is not really the 200 deaths. I look at how many lives have been saved. And if we start tallying up our victories, then we'll see that we actually are winning. In some cases, we are losing.
Yeah.
But Mondawmin Mall is the richest cash mall in the entire country. They're winning over there, Faraji.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, in the area where Mondawmin is, 7,000 people commute through that area a day, Faraji. And there's no reports of crime and these things that we so well associate with Baltimore. We are winning sometimes, and we don't recognize it. So this basketball tournament, the basketball tournament, is an opportunity for us to continue to show we're winning in West Baltimore.
Yeah.
That is a multi-million dollar brand new facility that's been erected in West Baltimore. There's the Enterprise founder, the Enterprise company is developing a 300-bed facility for both mixed-use properties right across from Coppin State University. So sometimes we have to recognize what's really in front of us. We think we're losing, and in essence, we're winning. So this is just a continuation of the winning tradition of Baltimore. Baltimore historically has won and have been winning, and we're going to continue to win.
And this is interesting because I know, Mikel, like, you know, sports has certainly been one of the, you know, a major landmark in this city. But to use sports in this way to transform human life is something that I don't think we do enough of. You know what I mean? Occasionally, you got your athletes that come out and they wave and they open up things and whatnot. But to really use a sporting event to promote a larger plan, and what you're talking about, Brother LaRon, you're not talking about just, hey, you know, let's just do something for the day.
No. This is transformative. And you got to give the guys in Boston, John and his team, credit. They bet on Baltimore. So if they bet on Baltimore, we definitely were going to make sure that we were going to represent and then begin to give resources to the folks in our city. So when you look at the items that we're going to lay the groundwork on, yeah, on August 2nd, we're going to do this every quarter. TBT is that foundation, but we've already talked to Johns Hopkins and the Baltimore 1000. We're going to make this a quarterly activity where we impact the community and continue to have that basketball in the tournament be the foundation for that.
Mm. It's interesting you guys say that because I always say, and I have a segment on my show called Sports and Society. I don't think people understand, like, your most triumphs and your most tragedies come from sports. We go from Ray Rice to Leah Steele real quick. And it comes from sports.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand how much sports impacts society so much. But this goes, I'll tell you a little history, a little here. Anybody could take this. But I happened to be able to come here from D.C. and go to, I graduated from Morgan, the Morgan State University, class of 2010 anyways. And over the years, I found the beauty in Baltimore. You know, I've been able to live my life here and grow as a person. And, you know, if you pay attention to what you read or pay attention to certain shows on TV, The Wire, you would think that everything that's here is negative. Now, when Freddie Gray came around, it came from something that was negative, but yeah. Freddie Gray showed the fight in Baltimore. It showed what Baltimore was willing to do to make a stand for itself, the people within the city. And you also now, because they have that light on Baltimore and America sees it, now this is the second light being as far as on ESPN, primetime. This is a huge, big thing. You know, the hometown hero coming home to a degree. I don't care what you say, Mel. I know Brooklyn and everything, but you're from Baltimore, baby.
That's right.
Walk these Pennsylvania Avenue streets, brother. But anyway, how important is that to be able to showcase this city in another limelight? Because there's a lot of things that is often missed sometimes.
That's if I could just pick up real quick, Freddie. It's critical because, as you just pointed out, I don't see the Baltimore that some people say that the world perceives Baltimore as. I just right. don't see that Baltimore. And I always go to the assets. You know, Maryland Zoo, the Maryland Zoo. Maryland has a zoo. That Maryland Zoo is located less than a mile from Coppin State University.
Yeah.
You know, Baltimore has the, per capita, it has the largest amount of parks and open space per capita of any major city.
Wow.
It has more tennis courts than any major city.
Wow. You sure you ain't capita. Wikipedia? Because you can
be no, no. stuff. No, I'm trying to think. He said more tennis court. He didn't produce a Serena yet.
No, but the point is this. When Baltimore collects its assets, all right?
Yeah.
When they collect its assets, what they're going to see is that their balance sheet is not in the red, it's in the black. So we appreciate John and Jen and Dan and the team for giving us the opportunity to put, as you said, that spotlight on Baltimore. No, this is the greatest city in America. This is a city that reads.
Because, John, I want to bring you into that because, I mean, this is and I know Brother LaRon can attest to it as well, that when you have these conversations about bringing business to Baltimore, there are a lot of, there are more conversations about the risk that are attached to it. So how were you able to penetrate through all of that perception or misperception to see and understand that there's a real value to the city?
I mean, honestly, we would never have considered Baltimore if not for the work of Derek and LaRon.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, I was probably approached within 90 seconds of the final buzzer going off in our 2016 championship on the court by Derek pitching us to go to Baltimore.
That's Derek Chase for you.
we were standing in New York City, and you know, I'm an outsider to Baltimore. I've been, you know, a handful of times up until, you know, this whole process. But you know what? As we dug into it, and as LaRon and Derek really sold us on it, what we realized is Baltimore is, you know, it's got its ups and downs, but it's authentic, it's genuine, there's character there, and it's real. And those are the pillars of what we feel TBT is. And we, you know, in this world now where things are so, you know, glitzy and out there and polished, you know, it's very valuable to find things, even if they're flawed at times, that are real. And we prize TBT, the fact that this process is real. And anyone can enter this tournament. You know, we throw the ball out there. We'll keep it a safe event. But we're very clear that, you know, leave your basketball resume at the door. We don't care if you played in the NBA before. We don't care if you've never played even college basketball before. This is a real competition. And if you belong here, then you're going to win and succeed.
Wow. Brother LaRon, you want to add to that?
No, it's right. And I think what we're doing is really changing the narrative. Because, again, 2 years ago, you know, we had the spotlight. And we're going right into those same communities, Mondawmin, Upton Penn North, North Engage, Cherry Hill. And it's really about that fight and changing that narrative on what's positive about our city. And it's really the first opportunity to create a blueprint for public-private partnerships. And to have an outsider from Boston be the engine to lead that conversation, we need to celebrate that. And all Baltimore has to do is come and sell out Coppin State University. It didn't cost the city one dime for this event to be here. We went out and raised the money. The city needs to get behind it, celebrate, which we see and feel that they are. And it's going to be a great time next week.
And this is all going to be on ESPN.
ESPN.
The worldwide leader.
And, you know, just talking about sport, talking about the TBT tournament, had the opportunity last week to go back to New York, but it wasn't the semifinals. It was the Sweet 16. And I had an opportunity to build have a few conversations with the Prodigal Sons. And John knows about the Prodigal Sons. These are a group of guys who played in high school, who were the Cinderella team. Now, of course, you have some players who've gone and ascended and played college ball, and you know they have their own stories. But for the most part, the core of the team was three high school players who had defeated everyone up to that point. And that's really what Baltimore is, man. Baltimore is always, right now, we have the youngest champion in boxing. We fighting, baby. And we thank this city for allowing and doing what it is that they're doing right now in terms of applauding and bringing the city. But as Finney alluded to, we need everyone out there on August 1st and August 3rd. We need lines around the corner. We need everybody there on August 2nd for the Day of Giving. We need the world to really see, because we're going to have the opportunity to advertise who we are in the entire world for 3 days on ESPN.
The worldwide leader.
And it doesn't hurt that Carmelo was probably going to sign this week. And the first opportunity the world is going to get a chance to see Carmelo is back in his hometown.
It's interesting.
At Coppin State University.
It's interesting you TBT, bring that baby. Up, too. Because, and Mr. John, I ain't forget about you. For me, from Boston, you better know about some basketball. I mean, you better grow up with Larry Bird and all in back, even though I hated Boston as a Laker fan. Anywho, Carmelo, Baltimore will always have a special place in my heart, and I'm excited to bring a tournament like this to the city. That's what he said in March when ESPN announced that he would be the host. Mr. Finney, the partnership was very organic. It seemed like a no-brainer. It was very easy. You know, it's easy to say these things as far as hometowns. You know, he always say Brooklyn, the birthplace, but Baltimore is where you saw Carmelo Anthony, you know. The generations here, I'm not from Baltimore, but the generations in Baltimore, you know, to talk about the richest in the city, Muggsy Bowles and the Dunbar Boys and all that good stuff. In that day and age, that's what that generation grew up as. I'm 28, and this modern generation, basketball in Baltimore, coming from here, or Baltimore, or period, means Carmelo Anthony. He is that predecessor until we find another. And so at this point in time, how important and how vital is that to connect it? You know, when everything happened with Freddie Gray, he was here. He did not send a message via Twitter. He walked with everybody. He's still a part of the constitutes that happen within here. And he's very, very vital. How important was that on a personal level to show these kids you can come out of here? You know, for me, seeing someone like Taraji, when knowing she was from D.C., said, you know, we can do it. We can come out. It's not just what we see every day. How important is that for that partnership to come to him to be right here?
Well, I think you have this tournament as the anchor, and you have Carmelo, and what's bringing it together, we're doing this hometown hero tribute during the championship game, where we're going to recognize William Wells from the Dome. We're going to recognize Leon Howard, Mr. Bob Wade, Nathaniel Brown from Cherry Hill, Mr. Leon Howard, Ernie Graham, and Reggie Williams. Those are going to be the hometown heroes that we recognize.
Yep.
And Carmelo is really weaved through those guys, because those are the guys, Mr. Wells and Ernie and Reggie Williams, that really made Carmelo who he is today. That's who he looked to see how do you play basketball in competitive situations. So, again, the way that this tournament is formed, the energy, and Carmelo is a no-brainer. And then there's some other things that we talked about today, myself and his team and Chase, about some things that he wants to bring back because of the Day of Giving. He wants to have more of a connectivity to the city. So it's just this is a movement. It's a movement around basketball. It's a movement around folks coming together. It's a movement around showing what's best about our city and about creating partnerships. And, I mean, we're just excited.
Only thing I say is, you know, I protest that next year you have this, you know, you stand on Morgan State's campus. Nothing gets copied. You know what I mean? Right on, my West brothers and sisters. However, Northeast, where's that player singing? I'm joking. No, excellent work, though.
Next year, we're going to have it at
Morgan. It is a beautiful campus.
It's a
very nice campus. As a matter of fact, I actually graduated from this campus.
We know that, sir. Yes, sir.
It's grown tremendously since I left, too. And it's only been come here.
Now, look, family, you can get all of the information. Make sure you check out thetournament.com to get all of the information about the basketball tournament. 60 64 teams, single elimination, winner takes all. $2 million is the prize. If you second place, you just get a pat on the back. Make sure you come out. Baltimore, Coppin State University, August 1st, and of course, August 3rd. This is all going to go down on ESPN, and on August the 2nd is the Day of Giving. That's going to include a healthy health and wellness at Mondawmin Mall, jobs and entrepreneurship at Coppin University at the Talent Center, and as presented by Global 1000 Baltimore, and there's a community transformation element that is so near and dear for the Penn North community. Let me just say this, since 2015, I haven't seen any change. I see a whole lot of politicians that were crying on camera, but I have yet to see any real substantial change happening in that community. And so I don't know what all that crying was for, but at this point, something needs to be done, not just in Penn North. We need to take it down east, down the hill, down to Monument Street, you know what I mean? And then take it down to Southwest Baltimore. There's so much that needs to be done. But brothers and John, I want to thank y'all so much for allowing this type of opportunity to come. And we hope, I really hope and pray, Brother LeRon, that as you talked about, that this movement will continue to happen. I really hope the best for Brother Carmelo Anthony, because I want to see him really being that place, because, you know, it's necessary.
Yep.
It's needed. And I hope he understands how important it is not just to have his face there in a public event, Brother Derek, but to understand that he is committed to this city like so many other past athletes, but not of higher stature like a Carmelo Anthony.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're going to get that. And again, everything has been intentional. It hasn't been a mistake that we're copping, that we're in Upton Penn North, that we're at the Kids Safe Zone.
Good.
It's intentional. And it's intentional because of the collaborative efforts that everybody have put on the table. So, again, we're excited. John, get to Baltimore, man. We're waiting for you.
That's what I'm talking about.
Cannot wait for this.
TBT's going down. Make sure. John, what are your final words, sir?
I'd say, first of all, I'm very proud to, you know, have a property after 4 years now that we can, you know, shed these positive lights like this, you know, beyond the basketball court. And second, since you took a shot at Larry Bird, let me start with this. Larry Bird, yeah, he was great, but I, you know, in all honesty, like Reggie Lewis was my idol growing up.
Wow.
Well, excuse me, sir. I just figured you better know about some ball being from Boston, how this gonna correlate and go together. I just want to throw that in there. Yeah.
That's what's up,
and
right
talk
there.
Talk about somebody who embodies the spirit of Baltimore. You know, a sixth man in high school who goes on to star in the NBA. That's pretty awesome. Yep.
That's what I'm talking about. John Muger, LeRon Finney, Derek Chase, thank you so much, guys, for being on Listen Up with us tonight. And, of course, we'll certainly continue to talk about why it's important to support TBT and especially the Day of Giving, transforming and moving Baltimore for real.
Sports
forward.
And society, they go hand in hand. People, you cannot forget that without us, on 9/11, everybody was waiting for football to come back to bring us hope.
Yeah.
So take that and just think about it.
August 1st, August 2nd, August 3rd, mark it down in your calendar. Brothers, y'all see my face in the place. I'm going to be out there.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate
don't
it.
Win them
thank you, Roger. Stand up, Baltimore.
Stand up, Baltimore. Thank you, Mikel. Up next, we got the official What's Good in the Hood Street Report. Stay tuned.
Good job, guys.
Welcome back to the official What's Good in the Hood Street Report. Hey, look, I just want to tell you a couple of quick things that are happening. This week, everybody's been talking about violence in the city. Well, tomorrow down at Connections Academy, come and join all of those who are active in the community, from the Nation of Islam to many other organizations and fraternities. Make sure you make your face in the place, Connections Academy, right there on Gwin Oak. 3 o'clock p.m., there is a citywide call to action where we're going to not just talk about what has happened, what could be done, but there is an actual plan to put it into action to affect those communities and, most importantly, those families that have been affected by violence in our city. So tomorrow, join yours truly, me, and as I go out there and work with the brothers and sisters from various communities as we talk about this issue of violence, that's going to be at Connections Academy tomorrow from 3 to 6. Also, next week, make sure y'all be a part of the ceasefire, man. I know there's a big, big push all across the city. August 4th through August 6th, nobody kill anybody for 72 hours. Ceasefire. Let's put the guns down. Let's raise the life up. And let's do our part to make sure that our community, our city is safe for the next generation. So that's all going down next week. And, of course, it's going to be a great week next week. TBT, ceasefire. It's going to be a peaceful, peaceful week. You and I got the power to change that, Baltimore. We got the power to make our city great again. All right, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank my wonderful producer. I want to thank Mieka Downing, my super producer, Iori. I want to thank my sports contributor, Mikel Ramos, my very special guest, John Muger, Derek Chase, LaRon Finney, and my engineer, my man Dre, for making it sound so good. Next week, we got the ladies of Listen Up. And, of course, we're going to have another edition of Rolling with Ramos. So you never know what's going to come out them ladies' mouths, but you got to definitely tune in to the ladies of Listen Up next week. That's going to do it for me, but as always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong, stand for what's right, while being yourself in the process. Kim Chase is in for the Duchess. I'm your brother Faraji Muhammad. Look forward to having another great conversation with you here on Listen Up, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM at WEAA.org, the voice of the community, and of course, the next generation. Peace.